Hello, everyone, and welcome to Defend Your Ship. On this podcast today, we're going to do something a little bit different than what we usually do. We've got two guests with us, and we're going to have just a fun roundtable discussion about Lord of the Rings. I'm assuming everyone's excited about that.
Woo! Yay!
All right, I'll take that as excitement. So with us today, we have your other host, Raina Sinclair, also known as not the other host. I'm usually known as the other host, but today, Raina, you'll be the other host.
Hey!
And then we also have Betty Brash.
Hello!
Returning to participate with us, and the wonderful, wonderful Caitlin.
Hey, guys.
Caitlin, shall we address you as Caitlin, or do you have like a more badass name you'd like to go by?
No, Caitlin's fine. You know, cool. You're a residential bog person of Brooklyn.
Caitlin is a badass name. What are you talking about?
Okay, my bad. My bad. I was just like, we've got Raina Sinclair, Betty Brash, and then we'll just have Caitlin and Stevie.
Works. It works.
It is very Always Sunny in Philadelphia style.
Yes, that's us. The Always Sunny of podcasts. No.
That's a stretch.
That's yeah, I hurt myself on that stretch. Yeah, I can't do those splits.
So, Stevie, do you want to make opening remarks for the roundtable then?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I think we're going to start off with just our ye old classic question, what are you into this week? And this is the part where you just tell us, what kind of nerdy, geeky, fan-ish shit have you been rolling around in this past week? Caitlin, do you want to start?
Yeah, sure. So this week, it's for me all day and every day J.R.R. Tolkien's work, specifically Lord of the Rings. The Silmarillion this week is something I've been really rolling around in, but that's because I have this very nerdy, almost pseudo obsession with linguistics.
Oh,
and,
yes.
Tolkien was very much the academic of his time, where he was kind of like, hey guys, did you know the source of this word came from a different culture altogether? I made a new word out of it.
Nice.
Love that for him. If you couldn't already tell, Caitlin's going to be the academic side of this discourse.
I'm here for it. I'm so happy to have that perspective. Raina, what have you been into this week?
I've been continuing my X-Files binge.
Woo! Nice, nice.
You're welcome. It's been a time. I've also been slowly going through the Castlevania Alucard, Sifa, and Trevor tag on AO3.
Yes, Castlevania.
That's not even sure I know what that means, but it sounds like you're into your lovely polyamorous ways as usual.
Just imagine a half vampire, a grumpy old like demon hunter that lost his entire family and uses a whip as a weapon.
Oh, great!
And then the like tomboyish like spellcaster that has ice and fire magic that just kind of yells at both of them all the time for being idiots.
Wow, that is on brand. That's on brand for you. Yes, okay, I can definitely see the appeal.
Yeah, and so that's what I've been doing with my week, is having 90s feels and having vampire feels, like I do.
Those are both of your feels. I mean, I know that you also do 90s vampire feels, so...
I do!
You sort of split those two out. Betty, what are you into this
It's
week?
Also...
I am also into Castlevania this week.
Ah!
But I'm into... Season 3, the most recent season, they introduced a character called Lenore, who is a seemingly sweet, like, beautiful cinnamon bun, like, too good for this world, very cute at first, and then it turns out that she's kind of a bad bitch. She's, like, she's not a hard femme, but she's very, like, dominant and she kind of like seduces and trains this captive human character who's like a necromancer, I guess, who got like captured at the end of the last season. But like they have a very interesting relationship where she's trying to like get him to agree to work for their side, and she's trying to like be diplomatic, but she's like seems very sweet at first, but then becomes very very sexy, and you see that like she's got a dark side to her. And I have been planning to do a cosplay as her since I like first, you know, saw that episode and was introduced to her character. Yesterday I got the wig in the mail. I tried it on.
Yeah.
I don't know if I'm gonna turn it into a burlesque act, but I was definitely like listening to like Femme Fatale type music on Spotify before this. So that's where I'm nice. At. But I'm ready to talk about Hobbits and Lord of the Rings and things that I used to care very much about, like 20
years. Used to care. Yeah.
No, I
feel you very much. I'll speak for myself. This week I have been into just a little smorgasbord of stuff. I have been revisiting my dreary bathhouse fan fiction and dabbling in that a little bit. Oof. Yeah, I know. It's still happening. It's still something I pluck away at every once in a while. Don't get too excited. No. And I also started a new manhwa series called Heaven Official's Blessing, which is written by the same person who wrote the novel for The Untamed. So anyway, back on that bullshit.
This is my shocked face. My shocked face.
And no one, I can't even see your face, but I'm sure that it does not look particularly shocked. So, barreling right in to our discussion today, I also have a lot of feels about Lord of the Rings. Lord of the Rings was one of my first aesthetics as a high schooler, was I in middle school maybe when I got really into that? Was I in elementary school? Oh my God, maybe I was.
You're young. That makes
sense. All right, it's been going for a while for me. I think I got into it right when the movies were coming out because I'd been just too young to read them. But my dad used to read me a picture book of The Hobbit as a kid that would scare the shit out of me. Because the drawing of Gollum was this like horrible, slimy, creeping little globulation. And he just terrified me.
Gollum is pretty terrifying, to be fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he is.
Is that the version that was illustrated by Alan Lee?
Maybe. I cannot remember who did this. But it was the same illustration style as the animation that they made.
Different illustrator then.
Yeah. It was just as terrifying in a still form. In fact, I think that the pictures in the book were scarier than the way they animated him in the cartoon. Yeah, but I would still request that he read it to me regularly anyway, knowing that I was going to be horrified and have nightmares. I'd be like, yeah, do it anyway. It's great. And then the movies came out and Lord of the Rings was all beautiful and lovely. And I was very seduced by just the elves and their whole, you know, tall, dress wearing, androgynous, long haired thing. And that was my first foray into androgyny, was just like, yes, okay, elf. My gender should be elf.
Aww.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know how well that's worked out for me. I'm really not that tall.
I mean, we all end up identifying as an elf at one point or another. So I definitely sympathize with you on that one,
yeah.
Stevie.
Yeah, I haven't really moved on from it. I think I still identify with an elf, or I identify as like, I think my other identification would probably just be Faramir. So.
Aww. Everybody loves Faramir.
Except his dad.
Except his dad. He's a good boy. He deserves better.
Oh, do you ever feel your mouth making a joke that you don't want to make, but you can't stop it?
It was great train wreck because Faramir is best boy.
Best boy.
Boy.
So who or what in Lord of the Rings do you all identify with or align yourselves with the most?
I made it abundantly clear, Hobbits all the way. Since the movies, I mean, I got into Lord of the Rings also, like, when the movies were coming out. I was in eighth grade and we went on a school trip to go see it. And I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. All the other middle schoolers were kind of like making fun and like, you know, talking shit throughout the movie, but I was just like mesmerized. And then I like inhaled the books immediately after.
Yes.
And it like became my life. And it like remained my life for a very long time, like long after people stopped caring about Middle Earth and like, the fandom had died and there was like nothing left. I was on DeviantArt, like creating fan art, running a Hobbit themed art group called the Golden Perch. I was writing like an epic saga fan fiction. All my fanfics are still up on fanfiction.net. I have Google Drive. My Google Drive is full of drafts, and I even had like a very detailed outline of like the timeline that things would happen in my story, because it was like based on what was happening in the Shire before the ring, and it was supposed to go like take a jump to when the war ended and then everybody came back, and then I just never got around to it. Then other fandoms took over my life and I just like lost interest. Thanks a lot, Homestuck.
Yeah. Oh god. Nobody tell J.R.R. Tolkien that Lord of the Rings was replaced in your heart by Homestuck. I think he'd die.
I'm pretty sure
he's already dead. So
he would definitely roll in his grave if he saw the comparison between two. But it's fine. I mean, they're both epic sagas. They're both written by,
you know what,
very detail-oriented people that love the sound of their own voice. That are
wow.
Yeah,
I'm for
comparing
this.
Tolkien to Andrew Hussey. I'm comparing,
you know what, to Lord of the Rings. I don't know how wrong you are, because they both actually did very interesting things linguistically, like with the way Hussey represented the trolls' different dialects through text.
I'm not. You might have an issue with me comparing great literary works to a trash fandom that.
I mean, we might be sent to nerd.
We're here for
this
discourse.
I think we might be sent to nerd jail, but we're not wrong.
I don't care. I'll die on this hill. I'm fine with this. These are the two sides of me.
Wow. Inside you are two wolves. One is J.R.R. Tolkien and one is Hussey.
It's fucking true, though. That's like very accurate for me. It's the like the duality of like the shitpost like meme culture personality and then like the appreciation for natural beauty and aesthetics and language and art, and then it's just like, yeah, middle of the night shitposting, here we go.
That is amazing and I love it. Caitlin, do you want to share with us your Lord of the Rings affections and an origin story or what have you?
Yeah, so funny enough, I think I was about 12 or 13 when Lord of the Rings, the movie, first came out. Now, keep in mind, my dad was obsessed with J.R.R. Tolkien and his work, specifically The Hobbit. He also read that to me as a child. But I got like the nice illustrated version of it with the red smog on the
Ooh,
cover.
Yeah. Okay. Not the one I had.
Yeah. Yeah. And I actually wasn't interested in it. I was deeply obsessed with Harry Potter at the time. And I didn't get reintroduced to Tolkien's work probably until I was in college, and that was after I found his poem called Mythopoeia. And Rena is gonna cringe over here. So Mythopoeia is actually a poem written in heroic couplets by Tolkien after a discussion he had in late of 1931, and this poem is basically him defending the art of myth making. And there's a yes, and there's a section in it where he makes the argument that Mythopoeia, that mythology contains spiritual and foundational truths. And of course, Tolkien would see that because he has a heavily Catholic background. But there's a couplet in there that's really stuck with me afterwards. And to quote the poem, it says, "There is no firmament, only a void, unless a jeweled tent, myth-woven and elf-patterned, and no earth unless the mother's womb whence all have birth." And that just sort of stuck with me afterwards. And then I read Lord of the Rings, and then I read reread The Hobbit as an adult. And then I got into the Silmarillion, which is, it's like everybody jokes that it's the elf Bible, but in actuality, it is the book that was written by men after they were told the stories by the elves, like 1500 years after the events happened. So it's basically man going, hey, these are really cool. How did this part go again? I don't know. We'll fudge our way through it.
That does sound like how the Bible was written.
Yes, very, very, like lots of parallels happening there.
That's
Lots of parallels.
fantastic. I love people who are really into the Silmarillion. I never quite got to that level. I've picked around in it and I've read like bits and pieces and I've pored through the appendices. But I have not, I never sat down and made myself read it cover to cover because I didn't have that level of discipline. So like, well fucking done. Well done.
Yeah, it the first time I tried to read it cover to cover, it took me about 14 months to do it. But that is how I found out that Aragorn and Arwen are very, very distantly related. We're talking like kissing cousins to the nth degree related.
Yep, been there. Yep.
Sounds like the Bible.
True. Yeah.
Yeah, but the whole thing just sort of stuck with me because Tolkien's work compared to other fantasy and fairy storytellers is that he really handles the act of myth making as a foundational truth, whether it comes from his mind or if it has parallels from like, you know, maybe from his religious background or parallels from his own experience as a young soldier during World War I. He even like probably made some parallels of what the predictions of the future would be after his death, especially with the burning of the Shire that happens at the end of The Lord of the Rings.
He was very upset about industrialization in England, in like Oxford, where he was like from, where he spent his youth. He was very upset about the beautiful English countryside being transformed by trains and factories and all that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Tolkien would like murder Jeff Bezos in cold blood if he lived in the 21st century.
Hey, I'd love to see
I would
it.
literally.
I would love
I
to
feel like
see
we need a new Ultimate Showdown cartoon just for that at the end.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
Wow. So,
Cool. Anyways,
Rain, I was, oh
sorry
yeah, go
to
for
answer your. I was gonna.
it.
Womp womp.
This is the fanfic we need for 2021.
Oh my gosh, guys. You know, it's that or simping for Sauron.
Right.
Anyhow.
Oh my God, I just saw that wonderful, wonderful post about is Sauron hot and is there a fandom for him? And like, yes, of course, one, of course he's hot. And two, of course there's a fandom for him. Of
Course.
You know what? I'm not going to answer your other question, Stevie, so we can segue into I feel that are we allowed to swear on this
Oh,
podcast?
I've been just
Oh
wondering.
yeah.
I've been
Okay. Oh yeah.
swearing, right? Yeah.
Okay.
If in case I haven't,
Right. So
fuck,
this
fuckity, fuck, fuck. Okay, we're good. Let the swearing commence.
is not safe for work in any way,
But
shape, or form.
we've I
had
hope our I hope your
actual.
listeners have
I mean,
headphones.
same because I really hope nobody listened to the J. Jonah Jameson episode without headphones.
Yes. So to segue into that, the fa segment fandom of Sauron fuckers, as I like to call them, I would like to categorize them in the same section as monster lovers.
Okay.
The scalies?
No.
Not
Well,
so
no,
much
they're not
just
necessarily
general monster
scalies.
fucker
Yeah.
status, right? Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, pretty much. I would put, you know, Sauron simpers, I guess I could call them, into that category.
We need that on
Oh my
another
God.
Nah, I don't, they don't need our help. I think they've
You guys, I have to make a confession.
Yes.
I was watching all the like Alien franchise movies this week, earlier this week, and then yesterday I watched Alien versus Predator. Predator can get it. I'm putting this
I knew you were
on
gonna
the
say
record.
that.
I'm putting this
I
on the
knew.
record. Predator fucks. And I would go down with
Predator fucks and you would go
that.
down on that.
I would get down with that. I
You'd
mean,
get
I
down
would go
with
down.
that.
I would let him go down. I don't know how it would work with the mandibles because he's got like the claw tusk. But
Oh no.
Predator.
And yet this is not nearly the most controversial opinion we've had on this show.
I'm just while we're on the topic of monster fuckers, it's not. You know, there might be some amongst you, just saying.
I love it. Yeah, I really love the way you've just humanized all of the Sauron simpers. I'm sure they'll feel better about themselves having heard that.
You start playing Dungeons and Dragons and you're playing a half-orc paladin, and suddenly you know, the monsters don't look quite as scary.
Yeah, suddenly you're just live on the Bad Dragon website and you're getting a lot of packages.
Stop it. We're not going there right now.
Woof.
I think that was in the neighborhood. We're just driving by. So Caitlin, tell me more about these Sauron fuckers. Is there more to say, or did you just want to shit on them for a second?
I'm not saying I'm shedding on them. You know, they let me just see if I can flip through my book, because there's a section in the Silmarillion about the falling of Numenor, and Sauron does get mentioned in it.
In the meantime, Raina, do you want to tell us about your connections to Lord of the Rings?
Well, in something that surprises nobody, I am constantly the fandom disappointment of my
Well, this
friends.
Is why I was shocked that you suggested this episode. I was like, wow, you must just really want to get everybody in some kind of a what is this? Is this like Jello wrestling for you?
Oh my god! It definitely is. I can see that she has no stakes in this horse race, but she wants to see the horses battle in the Jello.
So for those that you don't know, my father was both a Trekkie and a Lord of the Rings fan, and one of his greatest he had a lot of shames, let's be real, but two of his greatest shames was the fact that his daughter turned out to be a weeb. And I have said some incendiary things about J.R.R. Tolkien in the past.
I think we've all said several things so far in the last however many minutes this has been.
Zombie Tolkien comes back from the dead to fight Jeff Bezos. Like, what else?
That's probably one of the more flattering things we've said. Yeah.
So I think the things that, like, I feel about J.R.R. Tolkien is, one, I will never forgive him for him being the reason I have to read Beowulf three different times over my English literature education.
I don't know what
happened
to you, because I never had to read it. Oh, wait, no. Yes, I did, I just didn't.
I read that shit three times through high school and undergrad.
You spark notes that shit if you're not feeling up to it.
And also went to see the terrible 3D movie.
Why?
That was school mandated. It was
shame
my school.
Shame
literally went to the Palisades Mall to the IMAX and made us watch
that movie. Wild. They were like, you'd think that they would vet the movie first somehow, just be like, is this gonna suck? No.
They took 30, 15-year-old British lit high schoolers to the IMAX, and the look on my teacher's face afterwards was priceless. But I think what really, like, I enjoyed the movies. I felt that, like, The Lord of the Rings was a slog to get through book-wise, because I just don't think that J.R.R. Tolkien is a good fiction writer. I think he was a professor. He's really good at writing treatises about stuff. He's not necessarily good at, like, writing dialogue or getting you to care about stuff that isn't, like, sweeping descriptions of whom begot whom and fantasy, like,
backdrops. I have always wondered if I would have had the same reaction to the books if I had read the books before I saw the movies, but I think I saw all of the movies before I had a chance to finish the books. But I remember as a teenager having opinions about Return of the King and how I was, like, disappointed in that film because I liked the book better. But I don't know if I was just being a pretentious child or if I was right. I think I was right.
I mean, I used the same way, because I saw Fellowship of the Ring before I read any of the books, as I mentioned in the school trip. And then I read all the books, and then I became, like, a hardcore purist overnight. And when the movies came out, I was like, this scene is done incorrectly. Why
Why have Merry and Pippin not had the entraft? They were supposed to grow up taller. This is incorrect.
Yeah, I was one of those.
That's a mood.
I think that's like what gets down to my distaste for Tolkien is that it's very ivory tower, purist, like high fantasy, and like anything that goes against this is like apocrypha. That is what bugs me about Tolkien. And this is why I'm here for this discourse, because I guess it's partially because I wanted the content and partially because I wanted to see if my friends could convince me to feel a different way.
I feel like the two things that I have had the most emotions about when it comes... Wait, no, okay, the three things I've had the most emotions about when it comes to Lord of the Rings are A, just the aesthetics of the films are... That's really... Like, I'd stake my whole identity on those aesthetics. That was formative for me. Second of all, Sam's speech at the end of the Two Towers that they, like... I think added in there to address current events.
Oh God,
I like wept at that openly in the theater when that came out. It was like so. It's so great. It was so real to what I had been experiencing, like as a child growing up in Northern Virginia, and like just that part of my life was so fucking dark. Like we had 9/11 and the Pentagon, and then a year later we had the sniper attacks that we lived through. Like it was just a wild time to be alive, and that movie just. That movie just like shot me in the knee before it was cool. And then the last thing is Faramir and Eowyn.
Oh,
I had so many emotions about them, and I feel like my appreciation for their relationship was very formative, and very much in line with just the kinds of relationships that I like. Like two people who were sort of not what their parents / guardians wanted them to be fall in love and no one is surprised. I love that.
They're both characters who've gone through heavy trauma and they're kind of like underdogs, outsiders to their...
Yeah. Community. And they're both a little bit bad at their own genders. Like Eowyn's not like... Eowyn's got that sort of like...
She's a tomboy.
Yeah, she's a tomboy. She's not a trans mask character because, like, she's not the trans mask. People are going to see her and just be like, zing, that one. And Faramir, I feel like, has the same kind of vibe where it's like, this boy, nobody, like, his dad is so down on him and is like, you're not enough of, like, not you're not enough of a man, but that always felt a little bit inherent in what Denethor was getting at, and that Faramir was, like, too much like his mom, and it was this, like, sore spot. And that... I didn't even realize that I was having gender emotions about these two until years later.
Yeah,
that's totally legit. Yeah, I was like that.
Into, you know, education and books and learning things. And Boromir was like the jock older brother who went and did a smash.
And then Faramir falls in love with a jock. I love it.
Beautiful. It's a beautiful relationship, and I feel like it wasn't in the movie. There is like a deleted scene if you watch the extended
edition. Yeah,
I feel like it. I was happy for it. I'm happy they included it, but it did not do justice.
Not nearly the justice. Not nearly. I mean, if the entire Return of the King film had pretty much just been their relationship, I'd be okay with that. If someone just like went back and just made a film about the two of them, I would be like, yes, this is the content we need.
I need to pick it up. Like, someone go make one of those like really well done, like funded, high production value fan films, because I've seen it done. Like, there are some very obsessive fans out there, not just for Lord of the Rings, but like all kinds of fandoms. But like,
yeah,
some really good work out there, and it's like Hollywood, pay attention, learn from this.
Mm-hmm. I would want it to be like a weird indie rom com where it's just these two awkward people stuck in a hospital together.
Oh my God! And it's like the backdrop is like, you know, high fantasy war happening. Like I would watch that, especially if it was like that kind of genre, that kind of feel of like indie rom-com, like they're awkward and it's like, does he like me? No.
And her
watch the fuck out of that. Sign me up.
Yes, 100%. So what?
Yeah, that's pretty great.
Anyone want to touch on any of what I just ranted about for like 10 minutes before we move on?
No, I was actually going to circle back on the whole sipping for Sauron bit because I actually can't find the verse where Tolkien writes about how beautiful Sauron is. I actually think it might be in one of the unfinished tales or one of the appendices that he wrote after Lord of the Rings had been published, but before the Silmarillion got published, because it was published after his death. But there is a paragraph from the Alakalbeth, the fall of Numenor, where Aragorn and his ancestry is from. And it talks about, long story short, Sauron ends up becoming sort of like a deity of his own by the Numenorean people. And then all of the gods who are like on the edge of the world were like, hey, that's wrong. And then they sank Numenor because of it.
He was too hot to handle.
So, yeah, literally too hot to handle. And that's how he became a giant flaming eye.
It makes sense that Sauron would be hot, in my opinion. Because he's kind of like, isn't he kind of like an analog for Lucifer or Satan?
Right, I was literally just about to like reference the sexy Lucifer statue.
Sexy Satan, that's been a thing. Like, he's...
It's funny you say that, because he's not supposed to be the Lucifer allegory. That was his boss, Melkor, a.k.a. Morgoth. So he would be more like a very
Beelzebub.
So to...
Sleek.
So you guys will like this because, a very sleek Beelzebub. So you guys will like this paragraph because it talks about how Sauron had forged the One Ring. And it goes, yet Sauron was ever guileful. And it is said that among those whom he ensnared with the Nine Rings, three were great lords of Numenorean race. And when the Ollari arose, that were the Ringwraiths, his servants, and the strength of his terror and mastery over men had grown exceedingly great, he began to assail the strong places of the Numenoreans upon the shores of the sea. So, basically, they were the gods of Arda, a.k.a. Middle-earth, were kind of like, you're too hot to handle. So Sauron runs away to his boss, tail between his legs, comes back, makes the ring, and is like, hey, guys, you should put this on. Keep in mind, he's now wearing, the super evil armor, but he has such a silver tongue to him. The Numenorean kings are just kind of like, that sounds like a great idea.
This can't go wrong. We're cool with that.
And everything goes very, very wrong. Because then at that point, to my memory, and I'd be happy if the listeners comment and saying, if I got something wrong or not, because this is a very dense book. That's when the other gods of Arda were kind of like, this ain't happening anymore. And then they sank Numenor, a.k.a. Atlantis.
Sounds like they made it coming.
Yeah, that's essentially like the TLDR of the Alakalbeth, which is the last major story.
It's been so long
since
I've read the Silmarillion, I don't remember details. I'm just like, Numenor. It's like the Atlantis. That's like where all the men were, and then they all drowned, and then Aragorn's like descended from them or something, and that's why he's better than everyone else. I don't know. I vaguely remember that.
Yes. Yes. And it's funny because when I talk about how Aragorn and Arwen are distantly related, it's because Elrond had a brother who never gets mentioned in Lord of the Rings, but he had a brother. They're actually both human and elf because they're the children of Beren and Luthien. And, Eru, the great being, Ilúvatar, the one god from the creation myth, goes, so you come from both an immortal and a mortal person. This isn't going to work out very well for either of you. So you can either live your life like an elf or live your life like a human. And Elrond was like, give me some of that immortality shit. And then his brother Elros is kind of like, I don't know. I want to see what the afterlife is like. So he becomes human and he becomes the first king of the Numenoreans, which are a race of long living men.
Oh, man.
That just sounds so complicated.
I mean, it's not that complicated. And then, somewhere down the line, Aragorn and Arwen are kissing cousins to the nth degree, I think we've said.
Yeah, go ahead, Raina.
No, it's just it's very, the whole thing, I appreciate the work that went into it, but it's so dense.
It's a whole world. I mean, if you think about how many myths and everything we have in our world, This is like only a few cultures on like one continental area. It could be a lot more if you think about it.
Yeah.
Oh, there's so much more. And Tolkien was always obsessed with the concept of like closing the circle in terms of his mythmaking. And the reason why Aragorn and Arwen do end up being coupled together and being like the only interspecies couple in Lord of the Rings is because they're literally closing the circle of fate that came from their ancestors, Beren and Luthien. You know, like I said, this is literally like aligning of the planets, world-changing bullshit, which is why I have so many issues, not with Toriel as like a written character on her own, but Toriel in the love triangle that is in the atrocity of the Hobbit.
Okay. So I think for our next episode, we're going to dive into this Hobbit, in a loving, you know, in good spirit. A good faith bashing.
Like
Hobbit hashing.
Hobbit hashing.
They would think that was funny because of the weed. So that's good. So we're gonna hash out the Hobbit on our next episode. And bid a very fond farewell to you all today. Does anyone have anything they would like to plug? Caitlin or Betty?
Sure. You can follow me on Instagram where I post my cosplays and too many thirst traps. I'm Betty Bratt. Woo! And follow me for, you know, more Castlevania content unrelated to Lord of the Rings. Well, Raina and I have shows coming up. We're both burlesque performers and producers.
Yes.
But then in end of January, we're going to be doing our annual charity show. And once again, in terms of like nostalgia and remembering your youth, we're doing a Tumblr theme.
Oh yes, I am so excited about that, and I think I still need to submit my own bid to do something. If you still need people,
please do. We need more submissions.
And it's my 10th burlesque anniversary, so talk about the circle coming close.
Very appropriate.
Yeah, and if you want to follow me on Instagram for my general hot takes and photos of my cat, you can follow me at Vittyvane. And for more information about a bigger dive into the Silmarillion and the world building of Tolkien mythos, I would highly recommend the Prancing Pony podcast found on Spotify.
Well, this has been fantastic. And thank you, Raina, for suggesting this, because I feel like I wouldn't have suggested it because I have too many feelings. I have too many emotions to think they could come out in one episode. So actually they can't. It's going to be two episodes. So thank you for coming on this journey with me.